Hi, it's Diane. Great to be back with you. On my mind, the dramatic turn in U.S. relations with Iran. Over the last few weeks, tensions between the two countries have escalated, with the U.S. tightening sanctions and intensifying military pressure. Iran has responded by going on offense with tough talk and suspected attacks on a number of oil tankers in the Persian Gulf. Meanwhile, there are questions about why all this started and how far it will go. To find out more, I invited Shane Harris into the studio. He covers intelligence and national security for The Washington Post. Shane Harris, it's great to see you.
It's really good to be with you, too.
So for weeks, we've been hearing from the administration talk about Iran. There was some backing and forthing. Indeed, the president said, well, maybe my advisors are going a little farther than I want to go. What's going on with Iran?
Well, to tell that story, we kind of have to back up to the beginning of the month.
Good.
So on May 5th, the National Security Advisor John Bolton made a public statement announcing that an aircraft carrier group was moving into the Persian Gulf amid signs of what he said were warnings and indications about provocative behavior from Iran. Now, it's a bit unusual for the National Security Advisor to be making an announcement about a military deployment like that. But the immediate question was, well, what exactly is Iran doing that's provocative or that we think necessitates putting more forces in the region? And as it emerged over the coming days, there was intelligence that indicated that the Iranians might be about to take some kind of aggressive action, possibly against U.S. forces and personnel in the region, maybe in Iraq, for instance, where we have a big embassy there. And it wasn't entirely clear, though, what that intelligence was. Fast forward a few more days, and it emerges that there are photographs of the Iranians loading cruise missiles onto small boats. That makes some people think they could use them against naval vessels. Our government intercepted communications of the Iranians talking in such a way that suggested maybe they were about to launch some kind of a strike. And then we got into this realm of, well, does this intelligence really indicate something's about to happen, or is Iran responding to what it thinks is provocation or pressure from us? And then we find ourselves in this land of ambiguity around this information and what does it really mean? And now we bring ourselves to the point where the tensions are very high between the two countries. They're trying to read one another. And a lot of experts believe that the chances for miscalculation or some kind of escalation are higher than they've been in some time. And then you have a situation where you might kind of spiral out of control and then find ourselves in a shooting match with the Iranians. That's the extreme outcome here. What the president has been trying to do, it seems to me now, is sort of walk this back a little bit and look for some off-ramps and some ways to cool down the tension between the two countries. And when he talked about his advisors being out ahead of him, he was talking about John Bolton and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who are two famously very hawkish people when it comes to Iran.
So here's my worry, and I wonder if you have the same thought, shades of Iraq and our going into Iraq on, quote, evidence, WMDs.
Yeah. I think this is the echoes of Iraq are being felt here, being heard now. There we had a situation where the administration was making a case that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. And to make that case, they were presenting intelligence that they said painted a clear picture of Iraq's intentions, of its capabilities. And what we have here again is the administration sort of marshaling intelligence that it says is suggestive of Iranian intentions and capabilities. But there are some significant differences here, which I think give us some cause to be hopeful that we're not going down the same path, which is that a lot of this information is not exactly being declassified, but it's getting out into the public sphere pretty quickly. All members of Congress were briefed on this information this week by some of the top administration officials in the national security area, and they came out with very different views about what it meant.
Like what?
So the Democrats, it really breaks down on partisan lines here, which is not so surprising in the moment that we're in. The Democrats came out and said, okay, we agree that there are these images of missiles being loaded. There may be other information that indicates provocation by Iran. But is this fundamentally something new? Iran and the United States have a long history of sort of saber rattling and going back and forth and signaling to each other that they might be about to do something, but it doesn't actually boil over into a conflict. So the Democrats said, we don't think this is particularly new or especially alarming. Republicans tended to come out and say, well, we think it actually is alarming and may indicate a new strategy by Iran to be more provocative. But what's good here, I suppose, is that this debate is happening. And you see, yes, the partisan fissures are coming, are emerging here, but people are looking at the same information and coming out and saying, we don't agree about what it says. And when I've been talking to sources in the intelligence community and with our allies as well overseas, there's debate among them too. So it's not like everyone is getting behind one interpretation of the information, which is sort of what happened with Iraq. There was very little in the way of dissenting views about that. They sort of got drowned out. You're not seeing that here. People are really engaging with the information in a way that I don't think that they did back in 2003.
Do you see John Bolton backing away?
For the moment, maybe. John Bolton is a very skilled bureaucratic operative, and I think he understands how to read political winds.
Except he has been after Iran for how many decades?
Many. It is basically a longstanding position of John Bolton that the United States should seek to overthrow the regime in Iran and replace it with one that is more inclined to U.S. interests, which has been the fantasy of multiple administrations for 40 years since the Islamic Republic, you know, was declared in 1979 and overthrew a leader that we had installed. Let's remember as well, there's a long history there. But Bolton has never been afraid to say publicly, we should be launching a military strike against Iran if they're going to get a nuclear weapon. We should be bold. We should go farther. And so that's where he is now, this kind of new element here. He is so much more heated in his rhetoric and so much more hawkish on the options to confront Iran than we've had in someone in his position before, or even, frankly, running the CIA or the Defense Department. He really is on that outer edge, and he's in a very influential position in this administration.
So to what extent is the president buying into the Bolton argument?
I think right now he's not entirely. We actually have heard him come out and say, as you said, you know, our advisors are getting ahead of us. Some of our reporting at the Post has indicated that even in meetings, sometimes when they talk about Iran, Trump will turn to Bolton and sort of say, yeah, okay, calm it. Just cool it a little bit on the war thing. Trump has been very consistent.
How do you hear that?
We hear that from people who are in the meetings.
And they, even though they're told the meetings are secret, they do leak.
This administration and this White House have been leaky unlike anything I've ever seen in my two decades covering Washington. Yeah, and I think that one thing that's happening here too, and this is an interesting point, the intelligence itself hasn't leaked out, but the descriptions of it have. And I do believe that there are people in the administration who want to get that out because they were trying to play down the threat to some degree and say, okay, listen, this is debatable about what Iran is doing here. Don't just take John Bolton's word for it that there are clear warnings of provocation. It's a lot more ambiguous than that. So you have seen efforts, I think, to strategically get information out there to sort of counter him and try to ratchet down the pressure. And Trump seems to be on the side of, I don't want to go to war with Iran. Trump has been consistently against foreign wars for the most part. Now, people wonder how long that will last because he changes his mind about everything all the time, and he's unpredictable. But on this front for right now, I think he seems to be telling Bolton, cool it. And you see Mike Pompeo also trying to push more diplomatic avenues right now. If I'm reading him in his language, I'm seeing him realizing that the boss is not too happy with all this saber rattling. So let's dial it back a bit.
What about the American public? What do you hear there? I mean, the idea of putting more troops in, which I gather is going to happen anyway, frightens me to death.
Yeah, and I think it frightens a lot of people. There is no appetite for another war in the Middle East among the American public. I mean, we had years of war in Iraq. We're still engaged in Afghanistan. It's the longest conflict in which American armed forces have ever been engaged. I don't know how any administration would sell to the American people a full-scale war with Iran, which, by the way, would be a much more devastating, costlier, harder war to fight than the one we fought with Iraq. And we all remember how costly that was, even if the initial invasion went quite quickly. So I don't think we're anticipating a full-scale war necessarily, but there could be things on the lower end of the spectrum, bombings, cruise missiles, covert action, other things that could ratchet up hostility with Iran that the public might not see or might not quite appreciate as tilting into a full-scale war. But I agree with you. There's no appetite for more conflict. And frankly, the president campaigned on getting America out of these engagements. He's pulling forces out of Syria. He wants to ratchet these things down. It would be totally contrary to his strategy to then going into an election year, try and gin up the case for a new war under his watch.
However, one of the first things he did as president was to withdraw from that agreement with Iran. To what extent has that withdrawal sort of moved Iran to take the steps it may be taking? And I would just point out that in every example you've used the word suggest mm-hmm. or suggested. Mm-hmm. So anything can be suggestive, but is it actual?
Well, I use the word suggestion. You're very right to point that out because we're dealing with ambiguities here. We're trying to read Iran's intentions through things like photographs, intercepted communications, public statements, speeches. We don't sit down with the Iranians and say, okay, tell me what's on your mind. What are you thinking? We don't have those direct diplomatic relations. And so everything is sort of read. It's a bit of shadow play. And it's hard for people in the intelligence community to know with any certainty this is exactly what Iran is doing. And they're often very reluctant to tell the president that. So they'll say things like, well, we have confidence in this action, or this could mean the following, or it could mean something else. This is incredibly frustrating and dangerous when you're trying to make policies based on these kinds of readings, but it's sort of the best that the government has right now. You mentioned pulling out of the Iran nuclear agreement that Obama struck in 2015. I think that's underpinning most of what's happening here right now. Iran actually announced not long after that carrier group went into the Persian Gulf that it intended to start pulling back from certain provisions in that agreement unless European countries came up in 60 days with some financial incentives right. for the Iranians. From their perspective, they already had a deal with the United States, and the administration has now reneged on that deal. They want to stay in it, but they've made very clear that they're not going to stay in it for long if it's counter to their interests. President Trump has said he's open to having a conversation. He wants to sit down with the Iranian leadership, not
with
unlike
whom?
Well, in that case, it could be President Rouhani. I cannot imagine the Supreme Leader Khamenei sitting down with an American president. That just doesn't seem possible. It's hard to imagine President Rouhani sitting down, frankly, with President Trump. He's sort of viewing this now like he did the North Korea negotiations. If the two leaders, we sit down at the table, we hammer it out, we can work it out. Well, that hasn't worked really with North Korea. And we see already North Korea sort of ratcheting back up some of its provocative behavior, test firing rockets and so on. So he seems to think that if he could sit down with the Iranians, they could cut a new deal. The Iranian position is, we had a deal and you broke it.
So what's the European reaction to movements suggestive of whatever on the part of the Iranians?
I think generally the Europeans see this not as a new move by Iran to try and attack U.S. forces. They see it as a response to pressure that's been building up, partly economic pressure as well after we reneged on the nuclear deal. They are the people I have talked to in our allied countries are not viewing this, I think, the way Bolton is, that this is an opportunity for us to now seize to attack Iran. And they don't think that Iran is intending to launch strikes on the United States. One person I talked to from one of the allied governments said, look, these tensions escalate a lot over history, over time. The Iranians will start harassing ships in the region, you know, will put more ships in the region. Eventually, people back down. The fear among some of the allies is that the Iranians believe the Trump administration will back down sooner than it's actually going to. Now, we do see some backing down already in just in the past few days, so I think maybe the situation is de-escalating. But I know that the allies worry that this Iranian regime doesn't really understand how very serious and confrontational the current administration is. And there was a real fear for some time there that there'd be a big miscalculation and the Iranians would overreach and not realize that the American response could be strong.
So to what extent has President Trump decided he will take some steps to move this issue forward?
I think he's willing to negotiate, but there's not a willing partner necessarily on the other side. He wants to keep the military pressure up as a sign of force. That's why you had that carrier group go into the Gulf. It was going to go in anyway, but they sent it in early.
It was going to go in anyway.
Yeah, it was set to go in and they sent it out basically 2 weeks early, which is not insignificant, but it's also we should remember that there were going to be two carrier groups in the Gulf anyway. We just sped up the timeline. There's been talk about possibly deploying some number of troops into the region. We've evacuated some personnel from the embassy in Baghdad. I think the president is willing to go along with these steps to say to the Iranians, look, we're serious. We're not eager for a fight, but we're going to position ourselves to be ready should we need to confront you. After that, as far as the diplomatic avenues go, I don't really see a great outcome there. I mean, we say we want to sit down with the Iranians. The Iranians don't want to sit down with us. The Europeans want to stay in the nuclear deal. There's not really a viable diplomatic path right now on that front.
Now a quick break. When I come back, more of my conversation with Shane Harris.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District,
Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily. Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
Here's the rest of my conversation with Shane Harris. He covers national security and intelligence for The Washington Post. To what extent do you think this Iran question could have an impact on the 2020 election?
Well, most foreign policy crises and issues don't generally play, but, and a big but here, if the United States is in some kind of active military conflict with Iran, it's going to loom huge on the stage, right? And I think the president knows that. I don't think he wants to have a war going in. I know there is some sort of more cynical thinking, the kind of wag the dog theory, right, which is that the president wants to gin up a war because he thinks that the American people will get behind him and support him and he could lift his poll numbers. I don't see that. I'm not sure that he believes that. So probably where this might go is Democrats could use this as a cudgel to say, look, the Iran deal was not perfect. We admit that. But it was a deal that was constraining Iran from building a nuclear weapon. The president ripped it up and then tensions escalated in the region. And now it's more likely that we could have military conflict than when we had the deal. Democrats could use that as a critique of his foreign policy.
And can we talk for just a moment about why President Trump was so determined to tear up this deal?
There's a couple ways of thinking about that. One is that he seems to dislike anything that the Obama administration crafted.
Did.
Right. So there's that. It has that going for it. But we should also remember that there has been a Republican opposition and critique of that deal since it was signed in 2015.
Believing
that it didn't go far enough, that it didn't do enough to really constrain not just Iran's nuclear ambitions and developments. There are some people who think it wasn't hard enough, but that it also left open the question of Iran's support for terrorist organizations, for Shiite militias, its harassment towards Saudi Arabia, its development of cyber capabilities that can be used against us and have been.
It simply could not be trusted.
Yes.
In Trump's view.
Precisely. That Iran is a malign actor. He would say they probably weren't going to live up to the terms of the deal anyway, and we could have gotten much, much more from Iran. Why did we limit it just to this narrow piece of the nuclear development?
But then why not build on that as opposed to tearing it up and creating havoc with Iran and with our allies?
I think this is Donald Trump's negotiating style, right? This is what he sees as the art of the deal in foreign policy. He wanted to come in and make a big, bold break and a big pronouncement. It's sort of like how he promised to overturn Obamacare. Now, that didn't work out so much because he couldn't get his own party in line when they controlled both houses in the Congress. But I don't think he had an appetite for sitting around and trying to tinker it with it. He wanted to rip the contract up and make a new one because that's how Donald Trump operates. I think it's a lot of people would say that has been a profound misreading of the situation, because what incentive is he offering Iran to come back to the table at this point?
So what about the Congress, and how is Congress likely to react if we keep ratcheting things up?
You will definitely see Democrats questioning, number one, the intelligence and saying that it doesn't really suggest what the administration says it suggests. But also, the Democrats are very keen on asserting the congressional prerogative to authorize military force. They say we are the ones who get to declare war. The current kind of regime that's been set up for how we go about operating in the Middle East stems from this thing called the Authorization for the Use of Military Force, which Congress passed after 9/11. And it's sort of become this umbrella authorization that is not just authorized attacks against al-Qaeda and the war in Afghanistan, but has kind of creeped out and mushroomed beyond that. And there's been anxiety about that and debate around that question for years. We need a new AUMF. We need to restrain this. The Congress will say we've given too much authority to the executive to conduct war. So the Democrats want to see now a provision at least put in there that says you got to come in and ask us if you're going to go to war with Iran. You can't just use the AUMF, and maybe we need a new one as well. Republicans are very much lining up behind the president, have been long suspicious of the Iran deal anyway, are reading the intelligence as something new. Lindsey Graham came out and said it's very clear what it means. It's more than suggests. He said this very clearly shows that Iran is sort of itching for a fight and they need to be on notice. I don't think there's any real eagerness on the part of the Republicans in Congress to start a fight over whether the president has the authority to commit troops. I think they would back him, at least in principle, on that. Whether when push came to shove, they would back a particular engagement, I don't know. But this is really in the Congress just broken down on very clear partisan lines.
So when the White House went to Congress and talked about Iran, what kinds of questions did the administration get? Was there a provision of proof, not just suggestion, but proof?
No, I don't think there was, because I don't think the proof really exists, frankly. The questions they got really came down to, why do you read this the way that you're reading it? And this is an analytic judgment, right? This is all subjective. This is the administration saying, well, we have these facts. Here's what we think that they show. And, you know, I think the facts themselves are not so much in dispute, right? There are photographs of missiles being loaded onto boats. There are intercepted communications of people saying something.
Have you seen those photographs?
No, we have not seen those. They've not been declassified, but they've been described to us. And some of the intercepted communications have been described to us as well. So the facts aren't in dispute. It's what do you make of the facts? And this is, again, that subjective, ambiguous kind of realm that we're in when we're talking about raw intelligence that doesn't always come with a clear explanation. And so the administration, I think, was getting those kinds of predictable questions. And when the meetings broke up and members came out and talked to the press, you could see, again, these divisions of we're all looking at the same facts, but we're reading these things very differently. I also think that the Pentagon plays a big role in this, the Defense Department. The DOD does not want to go to war. And if you listen to what the acting secretary, Shanahan, has been saying, he's been trying to get across the message that, well, we see the Iranians starting to back away based on our beefing up of the presence in the region. He's almost saying, look, 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 we got to a truce. Let's kind of back away from this a bit. And I don't think it's bad for him to have the intelligence out there being debated, because, again, this kind of creates a bit of an obstacle, right, that we would have to get over politically if we were actually going to commit force in the region. So it's probably good for those people in the DOD who don't want to go to war to start creating a debate about what the intelligence really means, because that slows the process down.
So if Shanahan is saying those things, how long do you think he might last?
Well, he did just get nominated, so maybe they'll pull it before then. I mean, he's been pretty good about not getting on the president's bad side, and it's been sort of steady as she goes. I think it's really the military establishment, right? The Joint Chiefs that are probably the ones that would be in the best position to say to the president, look, if you were to take military action against Iran, these are what the consequences would be.
Do we know what they are saying?
I don't think we know exactly what they've told him, no. We do know that the military leaders and the civilian heads of the agencies and John Bolton have gotten together and discussed what the options are, right? There's always a plan for everything sitting on the shelf in the Defense Department. But we don't think that they've really sat down yet and given the president very clear options and spelled out what the consequences would be. I don't think we're quite there yet. I imagine, though, they would be very frank and very candid in spelling out just how costly a war in Iran could be for our side and for the Iranians.
Speculate for me how much time and attention right now the White House is having to focus on this issue.
I don't think the president is actually terribly focused on it. I think he sort of comes into the debate and the arguments after his staff and his aides have had them. It's looming large right now, I think, because the carrier group went in at the beginning of the month. This intelligence has come out. And John Bolton, let's be clear, and Mike Pompeo too, they kind of want an argument and a debate around this. But it seems like the president doesn't have a great appetite for it. He's very focused right now on the investigations that are going on, the talks about infrastructure with Democrats that blew up this week because he said, you have to stop investigating me. I don't get the sense that this is occupying a huge amount of his time.
How many troops do we currently have in Iraq?
I don't know the current troop levels. We have diplomatic personnel who are there. There's been talk of sending in some more thousands of troops as well. We don't have a military presence in Iraq, though, like what we had before. Those troops have left. Whatever is there in sort of a residual capacity is more for security.
And what about in Afghanistan?
The troop levels in Afghanistan right now are in the tens of thousands. We're trying to bring them down. There, too, though, the mission has sort of been static, if you will, right? It's been kind of it's almost more of a counterterrorism and a security mission at the moment right now. You're not seeing them go out into, you know, they're not taking new territory. It's just sort of holding the line. So we're sort of in these kind of simmering, you know, low boil conflicts that have not reached the levels that they were, obviously, many years ago. So we're not in hot wars per se. What we're talking about Iran. There, if you were talking about committing hundreds of thousands of troops, it would be something on the order. It would be a much bigger commitment than anything we went through in Iraq. If you're talking about an invasion, there are options short of an invasion,
such as
cruise missile strikes, covert operations inside Iran, cyber attacks to try and disable portions of their infrastructure. We did that in the Obama administration when we basically shut down a nuclear enrichment facility that they were using, we thought, to make in their weapons program. We shut that down with a computer virus.
But if you did use cruise missile strikes, we can't assume that the Iranians are going to sit there.
That's right.
And do nothing. So that would then obviously escalate.
That's right. That's right. And that is where the military would then come in and say, in the intelligence agencies, here's what we think the Iranians are going to do in response to that. And I don't want to downplay this. I mean, a cruise missile, if we actually were to bomb Iran or bomb facilities, that is not a minor intervention. It may not be hundreds of thousands of boots on the ground, but you're quite right. The Iranians will respond to that in some way. Then the question becomes, well, how would they? And then you're sort of in the realm of a guessing game, I think.
Right.
I don't know that there is any great appetite in the military for that option either, but I could imagine John Bolton, the National Security Advisor, suggesting to the president there may be so-called surgical ways that we can address this. He's advocated for them in the past. President Trump has authorized cruise missile strikes in Syria, for instance. It'd be a very different situation now than it was then, where he was attacking basically an empty airfield. This is where you get into the moment where, depending on who is in the room and who has the president's ear and who is presenting him what information, someone like John Bolton can have tremendous influence. These are really where it depends. It's so important on who the president is listening to, who his aides are, who's getting to craft the message. And I think what you've seen this month is John Bolton, a bit behind the scenes with a little sleight of hand, trying to craft a message publicly. And I do think it got away from him a bit.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how close are we to a confrontation with Iran?
I would put it at about a 5. I think it's not that close to 10, which sounds strange given how alarming everything is that we're talking about, right? But Iran and the United States' relationship has always teetered on a knife's edge. It's always sort of just been right there about to tip over into something potentially catastrophic. But I really do think in the past few days, you've seen the tensions ratcheting. And if you'd asked me that question 7-10 days ago, I might have put it more at like a 6 or a 7. And now it seems like it's drifting back down a bit. The Iranians are not stupid, right? These are very sophisticated people. They don't want a war with the United States of the kind that we saw
in Iraq.
But
then what is the goal for Republicans with Iran?
I think for Republicans, if you ask them, their ultimate goal would be to get a new and better deal and to try and restrain Iran's, as they see it, malign actions in the region, which, you know, they are malign actions. Some of them would say the ultimate goal is to replace the regime in Tehran. And I just really have to believe, you know, look, after 40 years of history and tensions between us and the Iranians, I don't see how that is a realistic goal and an expectation. Even when there have been democratic uprisings in Iran, the regime has brutally suppressed them. There is the fantasy in many administrations in this country of finding the moderates in Iran who will finally be the sensible people that we can negotiate with. This problem has bedeviled administration after administration, and there is this sort of fantasy that we're going to ultimately replace the clerical regime with one that's in our interest. And it's just so much more complicated than that. And history does not suggest that that's going to happen, and certainly not because of some intervention or force by the United States. If there's going to be change in Iran, it's going to have to be the Iranian people that make that change. We're not going to impose it on them.
Shane Harris, thank you.
You're welcome. It was good to see you.
And that's all for today. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Look for past podcasts and even old Diane Rehm shows at dianerehm.org. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineer this week is Natalie Urib-Livger. Thanks for listening. I'll be back with you on Tuesday. I'm Diane Rehm.